Welcome to the Forging Honor Podcast. I'm Jonathan George.
And I'm Benjamin Jones. Here at The Forge, we explore what it means to live as Christian men. Along the way, we'll be doing habit-forming challenges to build character through action. We are by no means experts, just two young Christian men trying to make sense of a wild world.
That's right. We do our best to learn and hope you'll join us on the journey. And if you want to get directly involved, go to forginghonor.com to find information on how to join our community.
This is episode 34, Health and Faith.
This week, we are joined by Kyle Erickson, who produced the weekend edition of the CrossFit Radio Show, coached at a CrossFit gym in 2011. He has done personal training with private clients for 13 years on and off and coached group fitness classes for about the same time. He completed Chris Kressner's Adapt Functional Nutrition and Health Coaching Program in 2019 with the first cohort of that program. He is currently building out a course with his sister, who has a master's degree in nutrition and functional medicine called How to Eat Healthy that should be out this September. He is also head of e-commerce, marketing, and content at Southern Ridge Farm here in Middle Tennessee, and he has over 20 years of experience with strength and conditioning training. We're excited to have Kyle on today. But before that, it is time for the challenge check-in. So as a reminder, our challenges, they last for 6 weeks. They are simple daily tasks to grow us as men. And our current challenge is a 15-minute challenge every day exercise. So, Banjo, how are you doing? How's that going today?
Not so good, Chief. Of all of the challenges that we've had, this is, for whatever reason, has been the toughest one for me, I think. So I am at, I think I'm at, if we're going by weekdays, I'm at 6 out of 10. And to improve my score, let's go weekdays. Because it's not going good. I had spring break last week, and I thought with time off from school, from teaching, that I would like have all this time to exercise, and it didn't happen. I had like 2 or 3 days where I was able to get out there. And then this week with school starting back up, I was hoping that exercise would be a place that I would be like, oh, good. I'm back from work. And now I can unwind with a little exercise and I'm exhausted. So have not hit the heights that I was hoping to, but nevertheless, he persisted. How about you? How's it?
Sounds like a lot of excuses to me. Like, it's 15 minutes, man. 15 minutes.
Well, you would be amazed. Well, I shouldn't say, I can't say this to you because you have kids, but I am amazed at how difficult it is to find 15 minutes that run together for exercise.
The point was anybody can get 15 minutes. And I'm happy to say I'm at 100%.
Good for you.
And I did miss a Saturday if we're going to count our weekends. That's kind of up in the air about whether or not we care about the weekends. That said, I've been in the gym 3 days a week. Very happy about that. Found a workout buddy. And then the off days, I'm either doing like a 15-minute run or a 15-minute core workout, something like that. So been going well for me. I'm also happy to report I've gained 4 pounds. So that's like the world record for me personally, because it takes a lot of effort for me to gain weight. But I'm excited to talk about how we're doing in that and learn some new strategies as far as fitness, nutrition, all that from our guest today. Kyle, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
We're excited to have you on. So as I read in your bio, you've been in the health and fitness journey for a long time. Could you just give us a broad overview, aside from what I read in your bio already? What started you on this journey and then where you are now?
Yeah. Well, so part of my testimony involves, I got in a bunch of trouble when I was in my early 20s, just was running with the wrong people, and I got hooked really bad on painkillers. I ended up going to a treatment facility to detox and get off that. And it's just, kind of part of my testimony and my walk with the Lord. So long story short, they said that essentially, outside of just time, the only other thing that you could do to help speed up the process of recovery was exercise. And so I kind of went all in, back then. And I'd already done some strength training, but I really made it kind of a commitment back then that was going to be a part of my life for the rest of my life. And so that's where it started. From there, just through God's providence and certain other ways, these opportunities came up. I was coaching people in my garage. So after my wife and I got married, we lived above a garage and a mother-in-law, and we were just hosting people from our church to do these workouts at our house. And it grew to like probably 15 people, 3 to 4 times a week coming over. And so that turned into an opportunity with Dave Young, who was the owner of a gym called Gravity Jane's, as a CrossFit gym in Issaquah. And then the producing the radio show was just kind of another thing. And it's just kind of grown from there. So
that's really awesome. And I know that you have taken on some clients now that you live in Middle Tennessee now near me, and you've taken on some clients here, and it's been cool as they not only learn to see them, not only learn about, you know, exercise and fitness, but also to add some of the nutrition aspect to you, which is one of the reasons I'm really excited to have you on. So specifically as a Christian, kind of setting the groundwork here, and why do you feel that this matters for Christians, especially young men? You know, our show is geared towards young men. Why should they care about this? Beyond just, you know, I want to get jacked or I want to look a certain way. What is that underlying principle for you?
That's a really good question. I think it's one that's really important to talk about in the church. I think that outside of, yeah, just the aesthetics of it, which, you know, I would say that's important, right? For if you're wanting to get married, obviously, physical appearance is important. I think, you know, we've spent a lot of time relegating that to the periphery, but you want to be attracted to your spouse. So that aside, that's important. There's more of a theological reason for it for me. Right now, we're seeing kind of an epidemic of testosterone levels in men. I think that's a really big one. Is that I was mentioning to you the other day at the farm, JJ, about T levels in 18-year-old men being similar to those of 65-year-old men. So there's a lot more going on here than kind of meets the eye. And for the longest time, I think the church has had almost a Gnostic view of health and fitness and nutrition, in the sense that it was always just kind of like, well, spiritual matters are more important. our bodies are gonna, this world's gonna burn. So there's maybe some eschatological things in there, but I think at the end of the day, at least I was brought up under the paradigm that you don't want to obsess over your health and fitness. You don't want it to become an idol and things like that. But it's important because, excuse me, for a couple reasons, things are different now than they've ever been in history. In terms of, if you look at chronic disease levels, if you look at autoimmune conditions, you look at how many people have food allergies. These things were not, they weren't even part of the conversation even back, you know, in the 50s. I mean, whenever they started messing around with food and spraying stuff with, you know, pesticides. And so there's so many environmental factors that we, as, you know, as humanity, haven't really had to deal with. So yes, coming from that paradigm of back then, and I feel like that's where a lot of the older generation is coming from, is they're like, well, I turned out okay, I'm fine. On the other hand, someone like me who's done their homework, and I've looked into the data, I've looked at the, you know, this kind of epidemic of chronic disease and all of the different factors that contribute to that, you know, from food to EMFs to vaccines to like I was talking about, chemical pesticides, and that list is extensive. There's endocrine disrupting chemicals all over the place that lower T levels. There's, you know, soy is another one that one cup of soy milk a day is the equivalent of taking a birth control pill. So there's a lot to consider now, and I don't think it is, as a Christian, we don't have the luxury of just relegating that to a periphery issue anymore. from a stewardship standpoint. Another really interesting, I think, theological aspect to this is the idea of inheritance. And most of the time, when you think of inheritance, you think about some monetary thing or leaving a house or land or whatever to your children. But you are passing on your genetics to the next generation. And so whether we want to look at that as, you know, something that is theologically super important or not, you have to think about the fact that your great-grandchildren, based on how you steward your body, are going to inherit the way that you stewarded your body. And so for young men who want to have children and who want to, pass on the legacy and the inheritance of their faith, well, part of that too is, I think, having the health and the robustness to live out their Christian walk in the best way possible. And if you're not taking care of yourself, then you're going to spend the latter half of your life on pharmaceuticals, having a hard time moving around because you didn't, you know, take movement seriously. So there's a lot there, but that's just kind of like the gist of it for me, is that it's no longer something that we can ignore.
That makes sense. And there's a lot of issues you're throwing out there, right? You've got, whether it's chemical stuff, genetic food, you've got, you mentioned even kind of hot button issues like vaccines. And then throwing that in with this theological burden almost, what might take this too far in terms of like, what's your warning to yourself as you explore this stuff? Because, you know, we've had folks on where you can start to go down a rabbit trail a little bit, which can be a good thing. But what would be your warning to yourself as you pursue these things and seek these things out? What are the, to keep your faith at top of mind? Because it sounded like you still would say faith is the most important thing in the midst of this.
Yeah. What comes to mind is that, that same word in Genesis 3, of a wife's desire for her husband, that same word's also used in Genesis for sin's desire for you. It crouches at the door and it's, you know, sitting there doing pushups, waiting for you to slip up. So with everything, we have to master our fleshly desires and our sins. And so as with all things, there's obviously the potential for idolatry with health and fitness. There's actually, what's funny is there's a secular term for it now called orthorexia. It's in the DSM, but essentially it's this idea that you have an overly kind of obsessive compulsive bent towards health, to where it starts affecting your personal relationships. Everything is what's on the label. I got to get to the gym today. And I think if we don't have margin in our lives for the fact that, you know, Jonathan, you have kids, I have kids, stuff comes up, things get busy, and you have to just, you know, you have to have margin in your life for life.
Right.
And so the balance is we constantly have to be self-regulation, self-rule, right? We have to be able to monitor our lives in a way as Christians where we're not allowing ourselves to be pulled off into idolatry in any area. And health and fitness is an easy one for that, just because you can, there's a lot of ditches.
Right.
So
that's a good warning just to set up the conversation. It's something, Banjo and I have been talking about a little bit. You know, what's the difference between, you know, working your salvation out with fear and trembling and then adding so many rules that you turn into legalism? And in this case, it could be, I could definitely see somebody where, well, I need to care about this specific issue. So if there's this thing in my food and it's on my label, I can't eat that, and it becomes this whole problem. Or I have to make sure I'm in for exact number of minutes a day. So that's a good warning. At the same time, I think you're exactly right. There's a lot out there that we don't have the luxury of ignoring. Yep, Banjo.
Yeah.
Well, Kyle, what I was going to ask, when you're coaching somebody, when you're looking to get somebody, somebody comes into your into your gym or whatever, when you're looking to get somebody to the next level, what are some things that you look for in their you know, in their goal setting? Like, how do you help them to set goals to say, okay, this is where you are, and this is where, you know, this is how to decide what to reach for. How do you get them to start thinking of the next level and get those baby steps moving in that direction?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think because for a lot of people, habit forming or undoing bad habits is a very common conversation I have with just about anybody that I work with, is the ability to create the right habits and create consistency. At the end of the day, it has to be the client's idea. So if I'm working with somebody, in the coaching program that I went through, we use a technique called motivational interviewing, which is essentially trying to get it. Ironically enough, it originated in the drug and alcohol recovery space because they were finding that no matter how much you told people what they should do, unless the idea originated with them, they would never be successful. And so the principle is the same, is that you kind of want to ask those questions, instead of coming in as the authority and just saying, this is what you need to do. You kind of want to ask some kind of probing questions to find the underlying motivators. And at the risk of going into, you know, some overly secular psychobabble, there is, I think, something there to finding the intrinsic motivator. So you could just ask people like, you know, what are your main motivations for even wanting to start a you know, strength and conditioning program in the first place? How do you see this benefiting you in your life? Or even asking the question, do you see yourself being able to actually commit to this right now? Do you have margin in your life for this? Because I think one of the biggest problems we have as a culture right now, especially the younger cultures, is we have entirely too much stimulation between social media and the internet just leave it at that. And maybe our work, maybe our home life. And so unless we can get good at creating margin in our life to actually dedicate the time that it takes to build muscle and build strength, build technique, build proper movement patterns, these things take time. It takes time and dedication to plan and map out your meals for the week and to properly source your food. And it's a huge time commitment. So you have to, I think the first piece is there's no quick fixes. There's no like shortcuts to this. It's kind of like building wealth. You know, if it's a get rich quick scheme, if somebody's got a thing saying you're going to lose 20 pounds of weight in 2 weeks, or you're going to put on 20 pounds of, you know, lean mass in 2 weeks, I would be skeptical of that, because it's really like, as with everything, as Christians, it's productive plodding over long periods of time in the same direction and consistency and getting back on the horse, you know, if we fall off, sort of a thing. So does that answer your question?
Yeah. I love that idea of that motivational interviewing. That's fascinating. Is that a thing that you can turn on yourself? Like for me, I'm thinking for a long time, my motivation for getting in shape was because I was on a team. I was on the cross country team in college, mm-hmm. and that was the thing. And I loved getting in shape for that. And now being removed from the team, I have done a couple of things, you know, I ran a marathon last year, but ever since the marathon, I have just kind of shut down and not really had any desire intrinsically to go out and exercise. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been able to figure out like how to plug back into something that I used to do all the time. So is there,
used to love, like, used, I know, to, you, love. Banjo, you absolutely had a passion for it.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote my senior capstone on the theology and philosophy of running. Like this is what I love to do. And now I don't have any desire to go do it, which is strange. Are there questions I can ask myself that I can start to plug in and figure out, okay, what do I need to do to start moving in the right direction?
Banjo goes to therapy on the Forging Honor podcast. I kid.
Well, I would say one of the things to start, Christians need to start thinking more multi-generationally, I think, first of all, and thinking about what are we building in this life that's going to bless our grandchildren's children, you know? And so one of the things you can think about, again, as I was talking about earlier, is you are investing in a robustness and ability to be present and a blessing as an elder, you know, in the church when you're older, by developing good movement patterns when you are younger. So, so that's one. And there's also obviously the genetic aspect that you're passing on to the next generation, quality of life, just in general. There's, and I'm just giving you benefits. I don't know if this is necessarily like the best, question to ask yourself as intrinsic motivators, because ultimately that's gotta be, you know, something that, that you can come up with, but just to give you maybe some food for thought, strength training alone, there was a study done in the British Journal of Exercise or something like that. It was in the New York Times, but essentially that 2 days a week of strength training combined with cardiovascular of, I think, 2 hours a day or something like that, decreased overall mortality by 40%. I mean, that's akin to non-smokers and somebody who smokes half a pack of cigarettes a day, 2 days a week of strength training. So just that's not a lot. And so if you think about just getting in the gym and do some squats and some deadlifts, you know, 2 days a week, and thinking about the longevity that you're going to get from that. And then as far as quality of life goes, I don't really ever deal with issues of these, you know, weird tweaks or whatever from picking up a box, or I go to play with my kids and hurt my back doing something. It's like, cause I take the time to strength train, and I train my sons now also, but I think getting into those habits earlier on and building some muscle and some core strength and things like that, just, you know, I think contributes to a quality of life and even your mood and your emotional health is impacted by exercise as well. So your ability to stay even keel and I'm forgetting all the words, but at the end of the day, I'm hoping that kind of answers or gives you some food for thought.
Yeah. A practical question off of that. You mentioned getting in the gym. Is that your, you know, should we consider investing in some weights and, or getting a pass to a gym, or are there calisthenic routines out there that we can get into that are going to give us those benefits that you talked about without having to invest in some of the, you know, the more expensive elements of the gym life?
I mean, the short answer is yes. And what I mean by that is, so get a gym membership. That's great. If that's what motivates you the best and you need that environment to mentally be able to get into, you know, a headspace where you're motivated to exercise, great. I'm somebody who can get motivated at home. My wife has a CrossFit membership because she's like, I can't do what you do. I have a whole, during COVID when all the gyms were closed, I bought a ton of stuff. We have like a whole, you know, pull-up bar and medicine balls and dumbbells and kettlebells and barbell squat rack. We have, you know, gymnastics rings, you know, I have a ton of stuff downstairs. So for me, it's great. But I'm able to stay motivated on my own. Calisthenics routines are great because you can do them anywhere. I used to go to, when they used to have them, they started designing parks differently and they're all weird now, but they used to have them where there was like monkey bars and stuff. I would just go find a park and just go do, you know, a bunch of pull-ups or muscle-ups and push-ups and air squats. You can get calisthenics. You can get pretty, like, there's some pretty jacked calisthenics people. If you think about some of the people that are the most jacked out there are gymnasts. You look at the arms of gymnasts, the guys that are able to do iron crosses on rings and stuff like that. They're huge. And that's just, you know, as far as I understand it, that's just body weight stuff. So if you can learn to do pistols and muscle ups and start getting into pirouettes and some of the crazy, you know, more crazy like gymnast stuff, you can get super strong. So all that to say, whatever, in your mind, when you think about fitness, you're like, that's, you know, that sounds a lot better than, you know, being at home by myself. That sounds kind of depressing. Well, then obviously don't do it at home. But there really is no easy answer. Again, it comes back to those intrinsic motivators. And I think just to tie it back to faith, there's a principle, I think, in our walk of obedience first, and then the faith comes after that. And I think with exercise, the motivation is going to come after you just start doing it, because your brain will start associating that good feeling you get after exercise with, you know, doing the deed. But until that time, it just takes getting in there, you know, and kind of gutting it out, even though it might be the last thing in the world that you, in that moment, you want to do. So
that makes sense. We've danced around this a little bit. But you know, you marry nutrition and fitness. Which is more important?
Yes. I mean, same thing. So there is no one or the other. In fact, if I had to say there was a 51%, 49%, I would say the nutrition, is a little bit more important, in the sense that you can, I guess in theory, well, there really is no way to get around being sedentary. Like we're made to move. But I would say that if there was one thing to pick right now to really focus on, and you had to pick between, you know, one or the other, I would say get your eating dialed in. Start paying more attention to where your food's coming from. I think the nutrition aspect, because there's such a lack of food quality anymore in kind of the mainstream food system, that, you know, is your meat's coming from a Tyson or some CAFO feedlot and pesticide sprayed, mass produced produce that's being shipped 3,000 miles to get here. It's not picked at peak ripeness. You know, there's little to no nutrient value in it. Like, there's a lot of things to think about on the nutrition side of things that, again, wasn't really an issue, you know, if you were even back in the 50s. So if it, again, though, I hate to even pit the two against each other, because health is more than even just exercise and diet. It's a myriad of things. It's your emotional health. It's your spiritual health. It's how you even approach eating a meal. Like, so there's your mental. So, and this is not some new age thing. You have what's called a sympathetic and a parasympathetic nervous system, right? So you have fight or flight, which is sympathetic, and then parasympathetic, which is known as rest and digest. If you approach a meal and you're so worried about the fact that you're eating a bowl of ice cream because you have these orthorexic tendencies, like we were talking about earlier, your body will process the food differently because you're in a sympathetic nervous state. It's going to basically take all that and store it as energy, because, and not to sound, you know, too evolutionary, because I think that there is legitimate ways that God designed things for a reason.
Microevolution, but, for lack of a better term.
Right, right. The only real evolution there is. Yes. But so that concept alone of when we sit down, and I have a great story from when I was in school that Chris Kresser, that I'll tell to kind of illustrate the point, is so Chris had he is a functional medicine practitioner. He had a client that, long story short, he tried everything with this guy. They had done lab work. They had basically guinea pigged this guy to death with all these different approaches to trying to heal him. They didn't know what was going on. But at the end of the day, they lost touch, and Chris had thought the guy died or something. Like he was gaunt. He was like really skinny. He ended up running into him, I think like a year later, and the guy was, his face was filled out. He had color in his cheeks and he looked healthy and robust. And he's like, well, what did you do? And he's like, pizza and beer. He's like, what? He's like, I thought I was going to die. And so I started going to this bowling alley by my house and eating pizza and beer and just enjoying myself, you know, once a week. And whatever mechanism was there, I'm not saying pizza and beer, you know, fixes things, but there was something about adding that, that element of joy back into his life that corrected something, you know, and that may not be the entire story, but I think it's a great way of illustrating that our intention when we go into eating that cheat meal or eating, just going out with friends and having pizza and beer, go and enjoy it and don't like sit there and worry about the fact that you're eating a bunch of pizza and beer and how this is going to affect whatever your gains or your, you know, your weight or whatever it is. I think that's a really important principle. So,
Kyle, I think that, oh, sorry. Go ahead, JJ.
It's just interesting how you receive what you have, the state in which you receive it matters. It sounds like there's a faith yep. element to that as well.
Absolutely.
Be interesting to talk about, but Banjo.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, it's a great point, that, you know, whatever it is we're doing, if we're not doing it joyfully, if we're not doing it with this, because we want to do it, it's going to make us miserable. In a culture, in a time, in a place where, you know, the way you look, matters, you know, we have so much social pressure around, you know, the food that we're eating, around the way that we exercise, around the clothes that we're wearing. Like there's just this constant social pressure. You know, whether you're in a secular, environment or you're in a Christian environment, there's always this, you know, this constant feeling and pressure to you must do it this way or else, you know, in the Christian camp, it's, if you don't do it this way, then, you know, you're going to hell in a handbasket. And if you do it in the secular way, well, you know, if you don't do it the right way, well, you're just a, you know, a bigoted, you know, troglodyte, whatever, you're getting canceled. You know, in that world, it is so difficult to do anything because you enjoy doing it, whether that's on the Christian side or on the secular side, whatever you want to say. How do we take something like exercise, physical fitness, nutrition, which has been, I think, one of those areas that is just absolutely entrenched in some of this kind of back and forth warfare, cultural warfare. How do we just enjoy it? You know, how do we not even take it back, but how do we even just as individual men say, you know what, I'm going to go out and do this thing because I love doing it?
Mm-hmm. that's a good question. I think that at the end of the day, and at the risk of sounding like, you know, kind of a trite canned answer, we would do all things to the glory of God, like that. And it, I think something to think about too is that Christians really should be on the cutting edge of everything because we have an objective standard of truth that informs everything that we do. So we should have the most accurate in terms of ontological reality, right? In terms of epistemological reality, we should have a robust theology of everything that we do. Everything we do should be informed by principles in scripture. So if we are relegating fitness to this secondary issue, again, this kind of Gnostic view that's, you know, godliness is more important, but I think that's a false dichotomy. It's almost a straw man argument that our bodies are not important. So we should, to the glory of God, take care of our bodies as best we can while maintaining proper spiritual health, while first and foremost discipling our wives and our children if we have those first and foremost, but making margin to take care of ourselves so that we can be the best husbands and fathers and employees that we can be. And so I think there's a lot of joy in finding that balance. And when we do set aside that time to take care of our bodies, the Lord rewards it. He rewards it through crazy, you know, dopamine and endorphins and stuff when we exercise. I don't think that would be a part of creation if it wasn't a good thing. I think I think a lot of CrossFit people and runners, they kind of chase like their runner's high, or CrossFit people, you know, like to just feel good and they get kind of obsessed with it. So you just have to be careful not to push one way or the other. So a good example on kind of the secular side, CrossFit, people literally say, this is my church, because there's a community aspect to it that, again, is intrinsic in creation. We're created to be in community with one another. And the aberration is that on the secular side, that it's supposed to be within the body of Christ. Like that's how it's supposed to be. So So on that side, there's a total idolatry that comes with it, where you have women that look like dudes, like they're built and have huge muscles. And I don't agree with that. I don't think women should look that way. But, and then there's guys kind of on the same spectrum. You just get so obsessed. And then in the church, you have this epidemic of obesity, like chronic, like morbid obesity. And those same people, I won't name names, but there's some well-known, you know, reformed like Christian apologists who will attack Christian men who are making health and, you know, fitness and nutrition a priority and saying, well, you're putting way too much importance on this. And that person is morbidly obese saying it. And it's almost like, do you not have any self-awareness? You know, like there's something amiss here. Like, I get what you're saying, but I would listen to you a lot more if you weren't 300 pounds and, you know, could hardly move and you just don't look healthy. So that's all I would say about that, is find the joy in the season that you're in, and whatever works for you, like, awesome, do it to the glory of God, and show that to the world, to the church and to the world, that there is a way to do it that doesn't involve the ditches on either side.
And in terms of those ditches, you know, how do we encourage, you know, those brothers and sisters that we have in Christ who, you know, for whatever reason aren't able to exercise, aren't able to use the body in you know, kind of what we might call, I don't know, normal ways. Like, you know, some people are just restricted by different things, you know, and you know, one thing I think that we tend to do in the Reformed world a little unconsciously is to say, like, well, you know, this is what the right thing to do is theologically, and we say it so loudly and proudly and you know, in some ways rightly, that way I think we sometimes exclude, we don't tend to think of those who might be on the outside. We had it wasn't Jamie, it was Christian Brewer came on, and he was talking about Bible reading. And we were asking, you know, should it be a requirement, or, you know, should we make this a priority? What should it look like to make scripture reading a priority every day? And he said, well, it's good to make that a priority, but, maybe we shouldn't say, you know, Christians must read their Bible every day in order to be good Christians, because he was talking about there's so many Christians throughout history who haven't had access to Bibles. There are people all the time who don't have access to Bibles. So we don't want to say that someone who doesn't read their Bible every day isn't a good Christian, right? But there are ways even for them to meditate on scripture, right? And to be in communion with God on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. You know, similarly, there's so many different limitations that we have now with food, with diet, with exercise. Speaking myself, I've got, you know, four or five different allergies. How can I, or how can the group work on some of these things to focus on, you know, caring for those who aren't within the normal bounds? I don't know if that question makes sense. I think it fell apart a little bit.
It does. Know? Yeah. What were you going to say, Jonathan?
I was going to say, or even, you know, we have a pastor who's in a wheelchair, right?
Right.
You know, the standard fitness advice isn't always going to apply to him.
Right. And so, one of the ditches I think that we can fall into, especially within Christianity, within theological camps and things like that, is using exceptions in place of rules, in a sense, is that there is always going to be someone in a wheelchair, somebody with cerebral palsy, somebody who, for whatever reason, you know, no amount of GAPS diet or, you know, gut health cleanses or anything like that is going to fix, you know, whatever chronic condition that they have. And what we need to do is make sure that we take those on a case by case basis, and do the best that we can and walk with those people in the way that we would any other brother or sister in Christ. And, you know, so I would just say, I'm speaking in generalities, obviously. We have to just be careful not to use the exceptions as ways to kind of argue for something that is a good thing. So to say, like, I'm not able to read my Bible every day, and I have a legitimate reason for that. I don't want to use that as a way to discourage somebody who really has no excuse not to prioritize that. Like, it, not from a legalism side of things, but just saying, like, let's make sure that for most people who are physically able, who don't have, you know, crazy autoimmune conditions that inhibit them, let's encourage them to love and good works and faith and all those things, and include stewardship of our bodies for the sake of our health, for the sake of kingdom building work, that we're able-bodied men. And so I don't know if that helps, but I think we have to make sure that there's margin for, absolutely, somebody who has a physical disability. We work within the constraints that are there. I think we can pray for wisdom. We can seek counsel on those things. There's obviously, there are specific groups for everyone. So I'm sure there's great reformed, you know, Christian groups that help train people with physical limitations. I'm sure that there are awesome, you know, groups of men and women who have come up with, I know personally there's specific autoimmune condition nutrition protocol websites that are out there that are specifically geared towards people that struggle with those things. So I think that there's already people that have thought about these things and specialize in those things, and I would point them over there. And so does that answer kind of what you were asking?
Yeah, a little bit. It's definitely on the right track. I'm just thinking of, you know, one of the things I appreciate about what you're doing and what about, you know, like why it's so important to think about, you know, our physical nature and take good care of it. It's just thinking about like who Christ is. You know, Christ came in the flesh, like that, like you're talking about that Gnostic heresy. It's so important to recognize that Christ came in a physical body, mm-hmm. and that he you know, was a physical human being who worked with his hands and who cared about the body. And I think even more than that, you know, recognizing that the body, plays a role in the resurrection, like our bodies will be present in heaven. And even thinking about how, Christ in his resurrection still bears the wounds, still bears the scars, from the cross. And I think that's just a great testimony to, how much the body is cared for. And at the same time, I think it's a remarkable testament to the grace that we have in Jesus, mm-hmm. that overflowing abundance of love and mercy that he had to take on that body, which has so many physical struggles and ailments, and that we won't have a perfect body. We won't have perfection this side of heaven, no matter how much AG1 we put into our, you know, water. But, you know, ultimately, you know, all things will be restored, in heaven. All things will be made new. And, you know, we live in the light of the resurrection that has already happened. You know, we already live in the resurrection kingdom. You know, the victory is already won. And we're just eagerly awaiting that body is to come. And just looking forward to that. I don't know if there's not a question really at the end of that.
So. Well, to tag on, Banjo, it sounds like some of what you're driving at is, you know, ultimately, if somebody is not able to perform certain feats of physical fitness, or they're not able to do certain nutritional things because of certain limitations, that in no way makes them lesser of a brother or sister in Christ, right? They Absolutely. Have faith in Christ. And ultimately, we get to look at them, and they get to believe that their body will be restored in Christ, right? Yeah. And that's their, unfortunately, the earthly struggle that they have been given. You know, you and I have different struggles and Kyle has different struggles, but
right,
you know, and we've been blessed that at least at this point in time, physical fitness is not one of them. So, yeah. And in that sense, physical fitness is therefore a gift that we have been given that we should utilize as best we can.
And we talk,
you know, you look at someone like Johnny Erickson Tata, her gift was music.
Right.
Yeah.
And the gift of her body was taken away, but she still threw everything she had into the music and the ministry that she had. I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And I would argue that sometimes those limitations adds greater depth of relationship and blessing from the Lord in specific areas that you know, in Johnny Erickson Tata, for example, that just take her witness so much further than it ever could have if she didn't have physical limitations, because there's something about seeing the manifestation of the curse in that way that reminds us that we, you know, we live in a fallen world. And so we see that and we're just like, man, like, I'm super blessed. Look at this person. I'm complaining about, you know, having to get up at 4:30 in the morning to do my workout. And this person, you know, or whatever it is. I think it lends to giving us perspective, lends to, you know, displaying God's grace and mercy like that much more, where I see someone like her, or like, what's his name? I can't remember it. That he's kind of he's an apologist, who has cerebral palsy, and he kind of goes after like a lot of the, like hyper charismatic stuff. Gosh, whatever. I can't remember his name right now.
We'll think of it later for sure.
Yeah.
So we've gotten, I've really loved this, getting into some of the weeds of faith and fitness and nutrition, how all this works out. But as usual, I have the tendency, I want to be the practical guy and kind of steer us in a direction.
Yep.
So in one thing that stuck out to me earlier, because you mentioned some people refer to CrossFit as their church.
Right.
Which is a fascinating thing. And a question that Banjo has written here about things like CrossFit, SoulCycle, Peloton. How are those affecting our understanding of exercise and maybe even co-opting it for the culture at times? I think there's some interesting conversations to be had there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just that alone with CrossFit is that I think CrossFit success, again, just comes down to, there's something about, you know, there's an amount of, I guess, quote unquote, suffering that takes place when you're doing a CrossFit workout. And so I think similar to men who serve together in the armed forces, there's a bond that's created that you probably wouldn't get anywhere else. And so I think that because of that element, it's created kind of a unique animal within the CrossFit community. And then there's been a lot of sort of spinoffs from, because of CrossFit's success. I think it gets a lot of things right in terms of the actual practical application. There's kind of some more technical terminology, but something about exercising in that anaerobic or glycolytic pathway that stimulates muscle growth, which people get results, and it stimulates fat loss. There's some controversy around the term afterburn, whether that's actually a thing or not, but you know, you see people and they go in and they get pretty fit doing CrossFit. So I think the results speak for themselves in a lot of ways. But to your point, Jonathan, in terms of like the fitness bleeding into the culture, I don't see it really in any other group. CrossFit is kind of its own unique animal. And I was a part of it like back in the early stages of it. When Greg Glassman originally created it, he was just studying how jacked guys were getting in the prison systems in California, just doing like really high rep, high intensity, like pushups and squats and stuff in their cells. And then decided, and him having a background as a gymnast, combining that with weight training and just doing it like really high intensity, short workouts. It was originally created to provide elite fitness for military, law enforcement kind of people in their garages at home. And then it kind of grew into this huge phenomenon again, just because you feel great when you get done doing a CrossFit workout, there's that camaraderie of suffering. And so it's just kind of like a band of brothers thing. Outside of that, like Peloton, you know, those commercials with the, you know, inappropriately dressed women on their bikes and things like that, that might just be, you know, I have no idea. Like steady state cardio, I don't know. I'm not a big steady state cardio person, but that's kind of more, I would think, where that would lean. And then what was the other one that you mentioned?
I think SoulCycle. It might be a Peloton competitor.
Oh, I don't even know what SoulCycle is. Well, but
so you're kind of differentiating between a few different forms of exercise in that, regardless of their cultures within those exercise communities. And Banjo, we're getting close to time, so be thinking of those final questions. If you were to start all over in your exercise journey, what types of exercise would you specifically focus on? I have a guess at the answer, but.
Oh, it's super simple. Barbells, back squats, deadlifts, and presses. Just the big three. Your investment of time in fitness is way better served investing in strength training than any other thing. You can get in shape in 3 weeks running. Muscle building takes years. And building lean muscle mass has so many health implications. You know, it's just resting state calorie burning when you have large amounts of muscle that you put on your body alone. The neuroendocrine response that you get from strength training is unmatched. The amount of muscle groups that you're hitting when you're doing a barbell back squat, when you're thinking about you know, your quads, your glutes, your hip flexors, your spinal erectors, your intra-abdominal like stability, your upper back, like that's just, you know, one movement. And the hormonal response that guys get in terms of like growth hormone, testosterone, all that stuff is just like off the charts. Same with deadlifts, like just these huge muscle groups and the benefit, you know, cost benefit, you know, ratio for just doing the big three lifts, I would say 100%. If you don't have a lot of time, spend 2 days a week and get good at, you know, barbell back squats, deadlifts, and strict overhead presses, or, you know, I guess you could make an argument for bench press, but I think bench press is kind of the parlor trick of the fitness world. So.
Interesting. That's fun. That's funny. Cause I enjoy doing bench press.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like the, what do you bench, you know, kind of a thing.
Right.
And,
right.
And it's not overly, and it kind of gets back to the conversation about functional fitness, which, I mean, any kind of exercise, I think, in a way can be functional, but I think the idea is that in real life, you probably don't do this, you know,
the up and down of a
curls, like curls are just, you know, you're just isolating a muscle group versus when you do compound movements, like a squat, you're using all the muscles at the same time in the way that they're designed, you know, in your body to work. And I think that if you don't develop the support muscles that you can, you know, get injured pretty easily. You've got these overdeveloped muscles. So you go to do something and you know, twist a certain way and you have an underdeveloped support muscle that just you pull super easy. So
you mentioned steady state cardio in there. What is your opinion on the folks, or what is your response to the folks who would say, you know, man was made to run. Like, we clearly have running bodies and all we should do is run. What's your opinion on that and then running in general?
Running. So again, I have a bias just because I like strength training. And I also would say, I do sprints a lot. So I'll do, one of my favorite workouts. It's just a bodyweight one it's 150 pushups, but every time you have to pause in your pushups, you got to sprint 40 yards at 100% effort. So by the time you get to, you know, 110, 120 pushups, you're only doing like, you know, 8 at a time. So you get a lot of sprints in there. So I'm a big, like, do sprints, push the limits of your cardiorespiratory capacity in kind of more high intensity stuff, so that when you do the steady state cardio, it's pretty easy. I would say absolutely run a 5K, you know, once a month, or a 10K once a month, or whatever you need to do, mix it in with your circuit training, you know, do some, you know, there's a CrossFit workout called Helen that's 21 kettlebell swings, 12 pushups, and a 400 meter run. And you do that for 3 rounds as fast as you can. And there's guys that can do that in like 7 minutes. So I would say if you're gonna, if you're not going to exercise, if you can't run, then obviously run, go running. I think runners, for the sake of just like, all I do is run and I run marathons and things like that. I would encourage them to incorporate some strength training into your regimen. Just, if for nothing else, it'll make you a better runner. You build up your posterior chain, you're going to build up your joints a lot better. When you squat, you know, if you think about like, the damage to your joints from just running a ton, you know, and not doing the strength training will actually create a resilience in your knees, and your back and all that stuff that you won't be able to find anywhere else. So I would encourage, you know, people, if don't just be a one trick pony. I'll just
right.
say that,
right.
You know, add in some strength training in there. You'll see, a tremendous amount of benefit.
Very good. Banjo, final questions. I have my last question in the wings.
What's the biggest misconception that you think Christians have about exercise, about health, about fitness? What's our biggest misconception, and what can we do to correct it?
Well, one of the big ones I think that we've already touched on a bunch is kind of the Gnostic view of it, is that our bodies are not important, or that stewardship of the body is not important. I think it is. I think we've covered all the reasons why that we no longer have the luxury of relegating that to a secondary issue, because if you're looking at chronic disease rates and you have the knowledge and you can do something about it and live a better life and not pass that on to the next generation, I think it's incumbent on us as Christians, again, to be the front runners of this and leading the culture. So that'd be one. I think secondarily, it would be that, and to kind of just touch on what we touched on, steady state cardio and reduction in calories, you know, that kind of 80s mindset for health and it is really off base. I think that caloric restriction can really can help, and it absolutely it does. You will lose weight, but you have to understand that that what's called weight loss resistance, where you have kind of that stubborn last 10 pounds or whatever that you can't get rid of. I mean, at my age, you have that. I don't know if you guys have it yet, but
not yet.
But I think that you have to understand things like detoxification and how those things work, that your body will store toxins in adipose tissue. And the reason why you can't get rid of that is that if your body releases all that, you'll get really sick. You've got a bunch of pesticides and heavy metals and parasites and, you know, candida or whatever it is stored up in that adipose tissue. So you have to, there are ways that you have to go about detoxifying first before you can get rid of that last part. So thinking that you can just cut down on what you eat and get on a treadmill a bunch to get healthy, you know, I would say there's more to it than that. And add variety, switch things up. I think that's another thing that CrossFit has going for it, is the variety keeps things interesting. But it also, when you keep your body guessing with lots of different things, you'll be able to avoid plateauing, I think, in a lot of ways. So once your body gets used to a certain thing, the stimulus that it creates in your body, the hormetic effect, the hormetic stimulus diminishes over time if you just do the same thing all the time. So those are a few things I would touch on of just misconceptions and things that people should be aware of.
That's really good.
Awesome.
I have the same final question I have for every guest. And that is, to young men specifically, you know, maybe early 20s, what is the one thing you would tell them to get started on tomorrow?
Start squatting. Learn how to squat. Learn how to squat with weight and take it seriously, because it's important.
Very good. Well, there you have it. Thank you so much for coming on, Kyle. Really enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Really good. So as a reminder, folks, we are in the middle of our current exercise challenge. We've been in this for 2 weeks, so we've got another 4 weeks ahead of us. Exercise at least 15 minutes every day, a simple daily task to hopefully grow us as young men.
This has been the Forging Honor Podcast. Music and production is by Elliot George. For more information about what we do or to learn how to get involved, visit our website at forginghonor.com. If you enjoyed the show, make sure to like, subscribe, and give us a rating to bring others into the Forging Honor journey.
On our website, you'll find information on how to do the challenges alongside us, as well as links to the many resources we mention in the show.
And we do make a small amount from many purchases you make through our website links, so thank you in advance.
Thanks for taking the time with us today. We hope you'll take up the work alongside us and join us in the task of Forging Honor. We'll see you next time.